If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Beyond the Paper Gown, hosted by Dr. Mitzi Crocover, helps people think critically about women's health issues, encouraging them to question and explore the complexities of healthcare systems, scientific advancements, and societal norms. There's a really cool episode that you should check out called Midday Menopause App, and that's about how AI and sensor technology can provide personalized interventions to manage menopause symptoms effectively. Check out Beyond the Paper Gown on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Raj Sundar, a family physician and a community organizer. You're listening to Healthcare for Humans, the show dedicated to educating you on how to care for culturally diverse communities so you can be a better healer. This is about everything that you wish you knew to really care for the person in front of you, not just a body system. Let's learn together. Welcome back. In this episode, we're starting our series on tuberculosis, specifically focusing on latent tuberculosis or latent TB. For those of you who don't know, latent TB is a state where the body harbors the tuberculosis bacteria but isn't actively infected with the disease. People with latent TB don't have symptoms and cannot transmit TB or tuberculosis to others. The primary way of knowing that you have latent TB is a positive reaction to a TB skin or a blood test. This latent form of TB is significant. Let me explain more. According to the CDC, up to 13 million people in the United States have latent TB. And this is why that statistic is important. Approximately 30% of individuals exposed to the Mycobacterium tuberculosis bacteria will develop latent TB. Of those people, about 5 to 10% of healthy, immunocompetent individuals will progress to active tuberculosis disease. Yes, that means that healthy people will progress, which means the rates are actually a lot higher for people with comorbidities or other illnesses. Without proper treatment of tuberculosis, 60% of HIV negative people, or nearly all HIV positive people with TB, will die. It's a lethal disease. And this disease disproportionately affects certain populations in the United States, as with hepatitis B, including Asian, Black, Hispanic, Latinx, and indigenous populations. It's especially prevalent among immigrant and refugee communities due to geography and living conditions. It matters where you're living and how you're living. One way to decrease the disproportionate burden on these communities is by identifying and treating latent TB. That seems obvious. Diagnosing people with latent TB and treating it reduces transmission, morbidity, and mortality of active TB disease. For tuberculosis, there are a lot of resources out there. So similar to our approach with hepatitis B, we will focus on the human aspect of it. We're going to answer questions such as, how do we address the stigma surrounding this disease? How do we effectively communicate about latent TB? Specifically, what metaphors and analogies can we use? How do we respond with kindness to those who decline treatment for latent TB? A lot of questions that don't have straightforward answers that you can find in a textbook. In line with the ethos of our podcast also, rather than get technical experts to talk about this stuff, we'll spotlight individuals at the forefront of community engagement. We'll hear from Frankie, an intervention specialist with the TB Control Program, and Mohammed, a community navigator. Both are integral members of the communities they serve, actively involved in education, screening, and connecting individuals to care. This episode is going to look at what care looks like from a community-centered perspective. But if you're a clinician and healthcare professional, you're going to learn a lot too, because a lot of the work that's needed in healthcare systems and spaces involves aligning with community needs rather than assumptions from where we stand. Thank you to Public Health, Seattle, and King County TB Clinic for sponsoring this series. Here's the first episode of the series with Frankie and Mohammed. Welcome to the show, Frankie and Mohammed. Tell me about yourself and what work you do.
My name is Frankie Era. I'm originally from the Marshall Islands. I'm a disease research and intervention specialist with the TB Control Program at King County Public Health. And I lead a lot of our program's new efforts in community outreach and engagements to increase community awareness around latent TB infection and why it's important to get tested and also to get treated.
Awesome. Thank you. This is Mohamed Akmosh. I am originally from Iraq. I came to the U.S. as a refugee with my kids and my wife in 2016. Since that time, I've been working in the community in different roles. Recently, I joined King County Public Health Community Navigators team. At that time, we were just responding to the crisis of COVID and trying to respond to the needs in the community and understand what kind of resources that will help. And I work within the community of Arabic-speaking families all over King County and connect them to resources, connect them to promote awareness or educate about different kind of like public health topics.
Thank you. So definitely an important topic with tuberculosis, and I think specifically this idea of latent tuberculosis, which is what we're going to focus on today. I'm so happy to have you all here with your connection to the community, because I feel like there's such a big gap on understanding why we are not able to make the progress we want and keep communities safe with this specific topic sometimes. So the first question I want to start out with is talking about what is latent TB and why it's important. How do you explain it? How do you even introduce the topic? And how do you define it?
So often we say, not everyone that gets infected with the TB bacteria gets sick. And because of this, two kinds of TB exist. The two kinds of TB are often referred as latent TB infection and active TB disease. A person with latent TB does not feel sick and cannot spread the bacteria to others. However, active TB disease may develop if the infection is not treated. In fact, active TB disease develops in 1 out of 10 people with latent TB. A person with active TB disease does not feel sick and can spread the TB bacteria to those close to them, like friends and families.
I'm not sick, Frankie, when you're telling me if I have latent TB. Does it really matter? You said 1 in 10, but when I was in my country, nobody ever talked about this. I'm trying to role play because I feel like people are still confused of, hey, I know about tuberculosis, but no one's ever talked about this. And who are these American doctors to tell me there's a new thing that I need to worry about?
That's another thing, right? There's a lot of misconceptions about TB, and the fact that TB is no longer a problem is one, when in fact, we're still seeing TB all over the 50 states. So it's still pretty prevalent. In fact, we estimate that there's around 100,000 people in King County with latent TB infection, and out of about 100 of them develop TB disease, at least in King County specifically.
What do you think, Mohammed?
When we go in these events and we talk to people, most of the times, people also talk about like latent TB. The main misconception is that they don't need to seek treatment for latent TB. And I believe in most of the countries like where refugees and immigrants come from, latent TB is prevalent and less control in certain countries. That's something that we are trying to promote among families that we talk about, like talking to their doctors, to providers about screening. It is something very important to be aware of if they have latent TB or not.
Yeah. I think it's a good point to transition to our next question of why is there such low rates of TB screening?
I want to say that there are communities with pathways to TB screening in place. So when arriving in the U.S., these pathways are already in place that allow them to access TB screening. However, even though there are these pathways, inadequate support often exist within these pathways, and people often fall out of the care cascade at some point. And what we've noticed is that it's often after a positive QFT, where people have a hard time following up for a chest x-ray. Even within these designated pathways, there's often inadequate support. So inherent barriers. And I think a lot of it is there's limited understanding, differences between latent TB and active TB disease. There's a lot of stigmas that prevent folks from following up, completing the care, a lot of mistrust as well.
Yeah. Tell me about the stigmas and mistrust. What is that? What do you hear?
So it depends. I know for the Marshallese community, there's limited understanding on how to navigate the healthcare system. So in the Marshall Islands, there's pretty much one facility where you go to seek care, right? And that's what we're familiar with. So if we're here in the US, it's very unfamiliar for us to get referrals, to go to different specialists and different field buildings for these different tests and follow-ups. We just get lost and don't even try to do it because, you know, we don't understand where to go.
What about you, Mohammed?
We hear from people when we meet and talk about TB. There are several misconceptions and fears about TB, which can vary across like different communities. Some people believe that TB vaccine can protect them against infection or like the development of active TB disease. Some people think TB is something like a person develops with age and hard labor. Some think that TB is cured with time, with no medications needed. Some people think that it's an indication that they have done something wrong. Or even there are like fear that TB diagnosis means like they are getting deported because like their immigration status rely on certain things. Also, people say people die from treatment regimens. There are several things that we hear from the community that prevent people from seeking TB screenings.
Yeah, I hear it. As both of you are saying, each community and individual has their unique reasons. How do you navigate that? Because it seems like for the Marshallese community, there's a reason. For the Arabic community, it could be specifically for the Iraqi community, that could be something. For the Somali community, there's something else. How do you navigate all the differences to ultimately get people to first get the lab test to see if they have latent TB?
I would say using different approaches depending on the community to share TB information. Mm-hmm. Some communities prefer to have a healthcare provider addressing the stigma or a provider from their own community that they trust and they can trust to talking to them about it. And some communities look for trusted messengers who look like them, like community mediators or like advocates who belongs to them. And some families seek from their younger family members to educate them and to inform them about what is there about TB. I believe clinicians should also normalize TB, include TB when providing health screenings.
Yeah, that makes sense. Frankie, anything else?
I think a big thing would be to ensure that patients understand the difference between latent TB and active TB disease. Many folks believe that a latent TB diagnosis means that they have the disease and are infectious. And these are also reasons that there is hesitancy in latent TB care in communities that don't have these TB screening pathways in place upon arrival. Reassuring patients that their information is private is also important.
Yeah. If I'm a clinician, how should I approach it? What if a patient comes to me in a clinic visit? How do I first approach the topic? Because we have 15, 20 minutes. And I think it's always hard when there's not adequate background info and you don't know what mistrust and cultural beliefs people carry. What have you found the best clinicians do that you've noticed that other people should model or replicate?
From my side, I would say collaborating with folks from the patients' communities mm-hmm. to learn about the barriers and strategize on how to address them. Just learning from the community, like what is the best way that they do this. Having also diverse staff from the same communities would help a lot because this will make the environment a little bit feel safe for the patients to talk about. Also avoid relying on family members to do interpretations or things like that.
Yep. I definitely agree with Mohammed. Develop communication strategies with community representatives that understand the culture, TB, and healthcare system is the ideal scenario, right? However, I feel like a lot of clinicians see patients without having access to any community representatives who understand the culture. Other cultural resources like Ethnomed. Ethnomed is an online resource and a great source for social and cultural details relevant to clinical care. In fact, our program is currently partnering with the Ethnomed team and Mohammed's team, the Community Navigator team, to create TB-specific cultural profiles. And there's plans to post them on their website pretty soon. Ethnomed.org is a good backup for clinicians who do not have a community representative available.
Yeah, I think that's really important to call out and how seldom there is a great community linkage, and we're trying to do it all alone. And there's no easy answer to this because it's all based on relationship. I think when people hold a diagnosis of latent TB, there's actually mixed messages from a lot of people about treatment. Because I think from your perspective, we want to identify it and get it treated. But often in healthcare systems, there's actually mixed messages. We don't look for it in everybody. And I think when it comes to treatment, the medications you take for a long time, you have to take it every day. The side effects are a little bit strange, right? Some of them make your urine red or orange, and you're like, that's scary for folks. How do you navigate that process? The second part of, okay, now we know you have latent TB because we have all the information. You need to take this medication when there's a lot of fear and mistrust still that we were still working through.
Yeah, it depends on what culture, belief, or practices are the barriers to treatment, latent TB treatment. Often, it is a matter that patients are not used to the idea of latent TB infection because in a lot of countries, latent TB infection is not treated. Also, like you mentioned, often people have heard about stories of side effects from medications and have this underlying trust of the medical system in the U.S. So one example that was shared to us is taking extra time to explain why latent TB is treated and to clearly explain the side effects of the medication. Having an appointment with the clinical pharmacist is another specific example to help the patient understand the regimen. Another specific example is treating like gastric reflux before starting LTBI or latent TB infection treatment. This is because many of the TB treatment regimens have GI side effects. Often if someone experiences side effects with one regimen, they will stop it and will be hesitant to try a different regimen. Folks can reassure the patient that provider wants to know right away if they have a problem with the medicine. They can stop on their own will until they can talk to their care team.
I think Frankie said it all. I believe providing information for people who sometimes talking to patients in advance or providing information about the side effects and things like that can prepare people well and make that kind of like extra bridge to for them to trust the treatment.
So now we got the screening, diagnosis, and treatment. A lot of it is on this culturally responsive care, making sure you're spending time to explain it in a culturally responsive way. And often that's with the community itself, as you're noting. What does it mean to provide good access to communities for something like this? Because I think a lot of people don't have a doctor. Like they just don't, because they don't go in for healthcare.
I think it'd be very difficult to tackle the issue of latent TB without dealing with this issue of having access just to general care. Because I think we've heard with a lot of folks just access to general care is a problem. What we found is that a lot of communities may need help, like the handholding, going through the whole process of getting established with a provider, having community mediators and navigators support the navigation of the healthcare system will be also very important. Which Muhammad team has been great at is working with patients and communities to help them navigate different resources.
Yeah, Muhammad, how hard is it to navigate the American healthcare system? And how do you help people through it?
I think like one of the big misconceptions when medical healthcare is available, because usually even these services or clinics that can provide these services assume that people understand that it's available and it's accessible and it's easy to access. I believe like working closely with communities, like relying on things like mobile, like dynamic outreach that can be available and accessible at the community's spaces, tabling at certain places that has been never like a traditional way to reach out to communities, like faith-based places or community places where it's not necessarily a space that's coming for like medical awareness and education kind of outreach. Working closely with community leaders and listening to communities, providing that kind of accessible information, like we have done flyers and some video content or some drawing, coloring activities about TB for kids, for these kind of things really help people learning about TB in an accessible way, that is fit to like their level of literacy, level of interest, and the ways that they engaged, each community engaged differently.
I love this idea of the materials that you talked about, like coloring books. Tell me a little bit more about these different materials, because I think people also don't realize the diversity of types of education materials we need. Because sometimes we just say, oh, flyer's enough, right? Here's a flyer about latent TB. Okay, pass it around in your community and then come to the screening next week. But I don't think that's effective.
First thing we want to do is have them available in many different languages as we can. Use a lot of visuals is what we've heard. Making sure that the language is simple language. Avoid jargon, avoid very technical words when we're creating our materials. Like you said, for some folks, flyers just don't work. We need trusted messengers. We need partners that are in the community actually talking, trying to explain the flyers. We've heard to create materials, audio materials, video content. Some folks may not like to read, or there are some certain health literacy levels that folks have. So we try to accommodate folks to have these materials or information in different formats so to meet everybody's needs.
Yeah, I find that latent TB really comes into people's attention in even more specific communities like daycares, right? We have a lot of people who are wanting to start daycares or working in living facilities, right?
That's perfect, because that kind of reminds me. So for the Marshallese community, it's been brought up this hesitancy around TB care or latent TB treatment. And when we highlight that specific benefit that treating latent TB prevents active TB disease, because active TB disease can spread the bacteria to those close to you, like families or friends, especially little kids. We notice that folks have this change where they're more likely now to get treated for latent TB infection. I think that's a good point to bring out, is that benefit of protecting kids as treatment, LTBI treatment to prevent TB disease, to protect kids.
Yeah, Mohammed, do you feel like what resonates with Dr. I think you work with the Arabic community, am I right?
I think we talked about the misconceptions. Like one of them is that treatment can be really dangerous or can kill people. Promoting the appropriate information from experts in a language that's, as Frankie said, that's simple, that fits to the level of literacy and level of engagement. Sometimes it's better to engage like a whole family about the treatment options, about the treatment side effects, and educate them more about, like in our communities, it's a family thing, like to discuss it. Like when it comes to health, personal health or something, it's a whole family decision. Like everybody is engaged and talk about it. So if that's possible, when we did workshops promoting awareness about what is TB, what is latent TB, what's treatment and things like that, people start asking questions. What is that? And I also noticed some families, like it's 3-4 people attending from the same family. Just want to, like, they all are engaged learning about this, like, concerning issue. So it's a collective effort where everybody is engaged and talk about it. And after even like the workshops, we have here like lots of questions and we receive like lots of calls and text messages about this and that and lots of feedback. I think what we have done through workshops, even going to like schools, so kids were like really engaged and they were like, we will take this message to our parents, providing a narrative that is appropriate to each and every culture in their language, and trying to talk to folks in a way that's friendly, I would say, that can help create that safe environment to discuss these topics.
Yeah, definitely. Just imagining being in a community where you're hearing maybe your friends say something different than Mohammed, who came in and said something different. And I feel for patients who are trying to figure out, is this treatment dangerous or not? My friend says it is. Somebody on Instagram just posted it is too. But then my doctor says it's safe. I don't know. I know my friend pretty well. He showed me he didn't feel good after taking that. So they're trying to figure out what's true. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I know some communities prefer to have a healthcare provider address these misconceptions or stigmas, a provider from their own community for some. Some look to these trusted messengers, like Mohammed had said, community navigators, community advocates, some look to their younger family to decide for them. So it really depends on the community, and understanding these different like dynamics will help guide these conversations.
I love that, Frankie. I'm always looking for one answer. You're like, it depends, like always. It depends on who it is. And that's, I think, part of the lesson is we need to know the person and know what the barriers are so you can personalize the education and this idea of what does it depend on for you. Mohammed, anything else to add?
I think, as you said, there's no one size fits all. It's a diverse ways of outreach, and everybody like in our team is they follow their own community ways. There's no pressure like on what to do and how to do it. It's all based on what we hear from our communities and what we learn from these cultures. And we only respond in a way that's led by the communities. So it's like a very flexible outreach and education materials that we provide to communities. And each culture is different.
Yeah, it goes against, I think, sometimes what we try to do just with health overall, we try to standardize it. This is the standard message about latent TB. Let's go spread it in the community, when there needs to be more of a dialogue and conversation. And I think it is truly a cultural tension in some ways of, I'll say again, westernized individualistic culture of, hey, this is the standard message. This is what we know. Here's all the details. Go send it to the community. Where the other is like really understanding the specific barrier for this community or this person and working with them to get the goal you want. And I think the other team, both you, Mohammed, and Frankie was saying, was also a conflict between individualistic and collectivism. We had a previous episode where Dr. Miley Taulii, Joseph Saia was on there, of how, hey, in healthcare, we're always like, you got to do this because you will live longer. And that's great, but that's not the first value for every community. And for some people, it's, hey, your family will be healthier and safer if you do this. And that's sometimes a better speaking point than just saying, you're going to live healthy by yourself kind of thing, this idea of individualism. And I think same thing with Mohammed, what you were saying of, hey, we're going to make a decision with the family. When I think in American healthcare, we have all these HIPAA laws. Hey, Mohammed, you're not going to share anything I tell you today with anybody in your family, and you're going to make this decision for yourself. Right. And I think that's not how it works either. I think a message that came out from both of you was having trusted messengers is helpful. Either clinicians that look like you or community navigators. I want the same thing. And unfortunately, this also I know, Frankie, that I think there's one Marshallese physician in the whole of Washington state. So I think the idea of finding someone who looks like you sometimes is quite hard because of systemic barriers. We got to do a lot of work with pipelines to get our kids educated to be clinicians. Maybe that's 10, 20 years from now. So when we don't have both of those and somebody from the Iraqi community or the Marshallese community, all they have is me, how can I still build that trust when maybe if we work really hard, it'll be 20 years before we really get those systems built?
So I've heard just spending as much time possible listening to the patient and family, answering the questions. It helps to have a few different approaches to explaining TB infection and to find the one that works best for the patients, provide as much case management for patients taking LTBI treatment as possible, having a clinic virtual phone visit with the patient at least once per month. That frequent follow-up is also important. Having the option of virtual visits seems to also make completing LTBI treatment much easier for many patients, right? If you don't need to come in, having that virtual option makes it so much more convenient. And then I want to highlight like cultural resources like Ethnomed. Our TB program also provides like consultations on different ways that they've supported patients through their TB care.
Have you found any metaphors that work to describe TB? Sometimes people talk about hypertension as high blood pressure, like pipes in your system.
We've adopted inactive TB instead of latent TB infection. We find that a lot of folks, the way they interpret inactive TB is pretty much the opposite of active TB. So they're thinking, when we say inactive TB, they're thinking you're not sick, you're not infectious, you don't have these symptoms. So we try to use different languages. Sometimes we say sleeping TB. Other folks understand sleeping TB better.
What about you, Mohammed?
I think, as Frankie said, terminology, sleeping TB or something like that, these kind of words. Also, like something that I noticed during the workshops, like the visuals can really help present these kind of concepts too.
Yeah. We do highlight that TB is something that normally attacks your lungs, sometimes other parts of the body when it's active. But when it's inactive, we have these pretty nice visuals where we say your immune system pretty much keeps the TB germs in your lungs and prevents it from attacking your lungs and other parts of your body. So visuals like Muhammad says, lots of visuals to try to explain TB.
I think that's a good tip. I think when we talk about navigating cultures is visuals, sometimes a common denominator in a lot of cultures, even regardless of their literacy. So having good visuals and then a few different ways to describe a concept that we're so used to calling latent TB. But how often do I use the word latent in my regular life?
Exactly.
And I'm asking the interpreter to translate this. So they're going to choose something that makes sense. So finding words that are relatable without sacrificing the accuracy of what you're trying to talk about. I feel like that's often a key thing here.
Yeah. And that kind of brings me to another point, right?
Yeah.
Language barriers and bridging language barriers. I think a lot of times an easy answer to that is like having interpreters, but it gets complicated if the interpreter is not aware of the culture or like aware of TB specifically. So they might just be like interpreting the actual words without trying to explain. Like you said, latent TB, right? They could literally translate what latent is, but without going into what it really means. Like we can use examples like sleeping TB or inactive TB or other like terminologies where communities might better understand what we're trying to convey.
Yeah, that makes sense. Anything to add, Mohammed?
I think Frankie said it all. I would say spending more time with patients, listening to them more and more, would definitely create that shared kind of space where people can be open more towards sharing. Because sometimes the power dynamic at the clinic, you are a doctor, I am a patient, and it should be like this and that. So sometimes people in some cultures, like they are silenced because out of like respect. So I would say trying to ask like open questions to patients and talk to them and listening, trying to listen to what they share and then understanding cultures more.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Thank you again. I think pushing harder on this idea of educating patients and talking about latent TB or sleepy TB, inactive TB is sometimes when patients, even if they understand it all, they say, no, I don't want to, or I'm not going to. I think there can be conflict in that situation. And I think as healthcare providers or system, we can be quite condescending, meaning we're paternalistic of almost, hey, you get it and you still don't want to, don't you get it? It's going to harm your kids and community. Why are you making this decision? And I think that can feel really bad. So do you have any advice for when that happens, when somebody says, hey, I understand it, but I don't want to, and I'm not going to, so don't bring it up? Or this, how do you approach that in a way that's kind and also make room for changes?
I think better understanding, knowing what these stigmas are or these barriers for treatment is a good place to start. I think I've heard from our clinicians, if our patients are firm on their answer, they bring up that in the future, they'll bring it up again. Fine, respect your answer, but we'll revisit this option again in the future and always make that available to them. Like the treatment is still an option and you could still do it later on and we might bring it up again later. So just keep offering it. It seems like it's the theme, reassuring that it's still available to patients.
Yeah, I think of often being firm, but hey, this is what we believe. Diagnosing and treating latent TB for you is important. And I keep saying that. And I sometimes try to be kind about it, or I hope as kind as can be, by saying, hey, this is just my job. I'm going to keep bringing this up to you. I'm sorry, you're going to get bothered by it, but I want to bring it up every time just in case you change your mind. And most patients like understand exactly. When I say it that way, like, hey, this is just my job. I just got to do it, even if you don't want to hear it.
I think also identifying their own health priorities is important and then figuring out a way to strategize how to include TB care in that, because healthcare, preventive care is different in a lot of folks.
Yeah. And that, I think that question comes up a lot. In other countries, you go to the doctor when you're sick. This idea of preventive care is foreign for many communities because it was a privilege just to go somewhere when you were sick. And us talking about preventive care is first confusing. And I think it connects as latent TB. If, hey, I'm not sick right now, so why are you talking about it? What about my friend who's really sick right next door? Like, shouldn't you be going talking to him? Getting people to understand just the idea of preventive care can be difficult, I think.
Yeah, I believe that's why setting expectation and building that partnership and trust between clinicians and patients would definitely bridge the gap, because the medical system is extremely different. Like, it's not something that we used to, like, to do all these preventive visits. It's not like an option. So I think setting the expectation, promoting that awareness and opening the space and the trust, as Frankie said, like, just talking about, okay, I'm here to support you and you can come back or something like that, would definitely enhance trust between clinicians and patients and community members.
Definitely. Next question is, having done this work for however long you've done, what are a few key lessons that you've learned that maybe you've done wrong, that you've changed, that could be helpful for others when talking about something like this?
I would say learning more about communities would definitely bring a common space to make sure that what you are promoting is accessible, is culturally appropriate, and is designed based on their needs, not based on your own opinions as a professional, as a clinician, or as a provider. I think being like a good listener to what communities share about what you are trying to promote would definitely open up more possibilities on how to partner with these communities. And I really love the idea, like, how TB team is basing then their outreach material based on what we bring from our communities. Like, the feedback from communities is the bone for all of these kind of outreach material that they develop during this time. And I love this because most people are really, I want to do this. All of these kind of concepts is pretty much common, but being more open to multiple different diverse cultures is definitely fruitful in terms of bring the result that you want to get when you partner with these communities. Because most often our underserved communities keep that kind of traditional way that professionals tend to do things. As you said at the beginning, it's just, here's the flyer. That's all. You print the flyer, you think that this is like all that you need to do. But like, how about talking to people while handing out the flyer? How about adapting your flyer to certain cultures? How about bringing that visual aspect or vocal aspect into your outreach? How about being mobile into and being willing to attend to access like certain community spaces that you don't usually go to? All of these things are really lessons that me personally, I think valuable for me to learn. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, I think since the start, we've collaborated with the Community Navigator Program, Mohammed's team, to strategize and implement ways to reach different communities around AATB infection. So they've been guiding us through the whole thing. And it's hard for me to say what didn't work, because I feel like we're doing it right. We're having community representatives lead us and make these choices on how to reach different communities around different AATB infection. I guess if I were to think of things that we could improve on is when we're out in the communities and we're talking about latent TB infection, is to be aware or to realize that we shouldn't be there to force this idea of latent TB treatment on people, because I think for a lot of folks, TB may not be a health priority. So one thing that I've learned is that we should go in and be open-minded and try to understand these health barriers or health priorities that community have, and ways to strategize to support them, because that'll be the only way for us to tackle TB is if we're helping folks with their other health priorities.
That makes sense. Thank you. That was great. So last question is, have you had any personal experiences with clinicians or healthcare systems that worked really well in a culturally responsive way for your identities?
I think what I've noticed with our program, the TB Control Program, is I've seen situations where our clinical team, I want to say, goes the extra mile for patients, especially patients in my community. I've seen that happen where some folks might have transportation barriers to get to our clinic for certain tests like blood draws and other situations. I've seen situations where our team makes an effort to go out to people's homes, to the home visits, draw their blood, and then bring the specimen back to our lab or our clinic. Other situations where when transportation is an issue, they offer that option to cover transportation needs. So I think in adapting and being culturally responsive, and it's never just going to be one thing, and try to figure out a ways to meet the community importance. So in those ways, I've seen it happen with our clinic.
Similar to what Frankie shared, I think most of the time, like at the clinic, providers tend to focus on like the clinical, which is understood, clinical aspect of health, which is the lab or like the lab result or like health issues that community members have. But I think if we shift the focus on things that are non-clinical, like as Frankie shared, transportation, access to healthy food or insurance issues or other things that occupy people's minds before talking about their health, this is more important than talking about this or that. So understanding the challenges when it comes to their daily lives, accessibility issues, things that are related to especially immigrants and refugees, it's a huge journey. It's a huge shift in terms of their lives. So they are overwhelmed with things that may not be a familiar kind of issues in other people's lives.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you again, Frankie and Mohammed, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining me on another episode of Healthcare for Humans. If you liked this episode, as always, my ask to you is please share it with one other person and go to healthcareforhumans.org to sign up to be part of the community. And lastly, thank you to Tessa Chu for helping co-produce this podcast. I'll see you next time.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Beyond the Paper Gown, hosted by Dr. Mitzi Crocover, helps people think critically about women's health issues, encouraging them to question and explore the complexities of healthcare systems, scientific advancements, and societal norms. There's a really cool episode that you should check out called Midday Menopause App, and that's about how AI and sensor technology can provide personalized interventions to manage menopause symptoms effectively. Check out Beyond the Paper Gown on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.